Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here again for tonight's class in Genesis. We are in chapter 41, looking at verses 1 through 36. We won't finish the chapter tonight, but do want to start it. There's been 2 years, at last we saw, Joseph was in prison unjustly. He was taking care of the butler, or the cupbearer, and the baker. And they were brought before Pharaoh, at just like Joseph had told us when he interpreted their each had a dream. The cupbearer was restored to his office. And remember, as you know, that's not just a matter that he's in charge of bringing drinks and doing the dishes, but he's a close associate of the Pharaoh, trusted, possibly the one who tastes the drinks before the Pharaoh takes him, but also is an advisor. He's trained. He has insight. But it appears the baker had been caught in some kind of a conspiracy, some kind of an assassination plot. We don't know what it was, but it's worth both of them going to prison. But when the evidence, after the FBI got done, the investigation got done, they were both brought out. One was condemned. One was fully restored. In fact, after 2 years, the cupbearer is still working with Pharaoh. But Joseph, who's gone through a series of hardships, tells the cupbearer, when you get out, remember me. I'm here unjustly. I was stolen from my own country. Doesn't go into the details of my brothers sold me because I was such a jerk and arrogant, and doesn't go into that detail. Just says it wasn't fair. And one thing, as we do look at Joseph does, and you have the same story I have, and you know the same details I do. I don't have any great insight, but we do know Joseph was one of the younger sons, and Jacob, his father, favored him. Now, that could have begun because of which wife bore Jacob, his favorite wife, or bore Joseph, but Jacob shows favor. And it seems like Joseph was doing a fine job of administrating whatever Jacob had put Joseph in charge of. When he ends up down in Egypt, his brothers didn't like him, he ends up working for Potiphar. And Potiphar seems to like Joseph. He trusts him with everything, left everything in his charge, everything's going smooth. So both these guys trusted Joseph. Both of these guys saw something in Joseph. There's some kind of characteristics about Joseph, if it's his confidence, if it's his ability to perform, if it's communication, if it's eye contact, whatever it is. Jacob liked him and gave him a position. Potiphar liked him, and of course, as we all know, she liked him. Also, Potiphar's wife. He's like, wow, she's very, and she, day after day, wanted some kind of a relationship with Joseph. So far, all the leaders, all the important people, Joseph is very appealing to. He ends up in prison, and the prison, we'll just say the prison guard or the prison keeper, he sees Joseph, and he puts him in charge, gives him, in a sense, favor, but the favor is for his own advantage, the prison guard's favor, so that he's got less to do. And Joseph does it willingly and does an outstanding job. So he's got this track record. And now comes the situation where you're going to have the baker and the cupbearer. And they're, you know, just going about their, they've got bigger problems than, you know, their relationship with Joseph. But they both have their dreams interpreted accurately. This one's eliminated. But this one remembers, finally, after 2 years. And, you know, you can blame him. But at the same time, this guy's just got off death row. I mean, you just get off death row on your way out. You don't say, oh, you know what? I really appreciate this, but there's a guy back here that I'd like to. It's like, I'm just glad to be out. What do you want me to do? And the past is the past. And I have never, in all the years we've been teaching or studying or even reading it as a child, it's like the cupbearer, well, at first, you know, when you first read it, like, why? He forgot Joseph. But I mean, you think about the guy. If you just got out of death row, it's amazing that after 2 years, when a situation comes up, the cupbearer does remember the dreams. Now, tonight, Pharaoh is going to meet Joseph. Joseph is going to be brought before Pharaoh. Well, we're going to read that. But Joseph just doesn't come in like a humble servant with his head bowed and, oh dear me. And he's, now again, he's coming right out of prison. But he gets right up and he interprets the dream, as you're going to see. Interprets him. Now the Pharaoh's going to be surrounded by, we can call them magicians, we can call them dream interpreters, we can call them servants. But he surrounded himself with these people that can interpret the dreams for him. And they're professional. I'm sure they didn't just, you know, see an ad in the newspaper or Facebook or Twitter or wherever you look for ads today. Have a look for a job for a while. And they just got hired. They probably went through whatever training, whatever, if it would be etiquette, if it be dream interpretation, if it be psychology, if it be the some magical, spiritual, Egyptian cultural underworld. They've been trained. They know how to present themselves. They know how to dress. They know the language. They know all the intricacies of the royal court of Pharaoh. And Pharaoh hears them talk, and he's not happy with it. Now we don't see why. We don't know why he's not happy with the interpretation. We don't know why. Maybe it's not like, again, you can read these dreams, and if we just went around the room, and obviously you can all interpret them because you've read the story, but it's not like you'd be like, yeah, I don't know how he got the 7 years out of seven cows. Really? How about the 7 ears of grain? I don't know, maybe 7 moons? It's like, well, how about 7 years? You know, I mean, it's kind of just laying there, and then the first 7 eat up the other 7 both times. It's like, it's not this great mystery. It is. I'm not saying I could interpret it there for the Pharaoh, but how does Pharaoh know? I don't like that. It's not like they all just stood there stunned. It's like, he probably gave him, can we counsel? And they probably went back and talked. Here's kind of what we think. And here's our options. And here's our chart. The 7 could be these. And since it's repeated, it could be this. And this is our flow chart. And we're all kind of, you could have come up with something. But for some reason, Pharaoh says, he just dismisses it. He knows it's worthless. He knows, first of all, you could say they didn't know what to say. Okay, they didn't say anything? No, they just stood there and shook their heads. They have no idea. Well, I mean, if I'm a dream interpreter and you call me in, it's like, well, it'd be like saying, you know, I'm a middle school shop teacher and here's your class. I can't teach this class. It's like, if they give you a class list, it's like, It's like, you show up and figure it out. Well, here's the dream. It's like, can't do that. Or whatever your job is, say, at least take a shot at it. And so he dismisses these, the interpreters, Pharaoh does. But the thing is, I learned how to spell Pharaoh this week. I've never been able to spell Pharaoh. You ought to see my computer. When I get into spell check, spell just like underlined all these things. It's P-H-A-R. I knew that. But sometimes I put an O there because I wasn't sure. But then right after the A-R comes another A. It's A-R-A and then O at the end. Pharaoh. You should see it. I mean, I am not a good speller. And I think it's because I don't care. It's part academic. Some people are just good spellers. I mean, it's not like I'm telling you something. Wow, we never knew you weren't a very good speller. It's not like there's any secret being exposed here. But I may never spell Pharaoh wrong again. It's just all of a sudden I was typing it, and it's like, how do you spell? And I looked at it, it's like A-R-A. And then all of a sudden, oh. I mean, like one of those seven-year-old experiences. Oh, I know how to spell it. 65, and I finally figure out a seven-year-old word. But anyway. That's not the point of it. I just was proud because I've never written Pharaoh on the board before. Have you ever noticed PH or something like that, you know, or just not write it at all? But Pharaoh, I even wrote it kind of neat. See? Pharaoh. Pretty proud. Okay, it's a sad day for a 65-year-old man. But Pharaoh is going to hear the dream, and when he hears the dream, he's just... It's like he just accepts it like it was the first time anyone had attempted. Now, it could be that it's Pharaoh had a, I want it to mean this, and it wanted to be really positive. But you see, Pharaoh, Joseph's interpretation is not positive. It's like, we have 7 years of winning, 7 years of losing. That wipes out the entire 7 years of winning. So Pharaoh's, you could say the other interpreters, they didn't give him a positive response. They didn't give him, you didn't tell me what I wanted to hear. Well, it's not like Joseph is telling him what he wants to hear. 7 years of plenty, and then 7 years that destroys everything we've got. So it really is a negative interpretation. So it can't be Pharaoh's like, well, that's better than what the other guy said. Well, what? How bad was it? We're going to wipe everything out, is what the dream is. One thing that could have happened in the interpretation is they're impressed with Pharaoh. So they're trying to figure out what, how this applies to Pharaoh. You know, you're going to have, and Pharaoh, if he's a good leader, and I think we can assume, you can't just look at every leader in every country throughout history and, oh, they're the leader, they must be a loser. Even Herod the Great. I mean, we got a very bad impression of Herod the Great, and Herod the Great had his issues. But Herod the Great really tried to please the Jewish people. We just barely got into it last night. But he was, there's so many things that he did to please the Jews. He built the temple. He built the temple, the glorious temple of Herod. I mean, it's Solomon's temple in rubble. Then it was rebuilt by Zerubbabel. And when Herod moves in, it's kind of like, it's like Trump moving into the White House. It's like, you know, guys, I know this is historical. I know this is a special place, but we can up our game here in the White House. And just like when Trump gets down at the White House, it's going to be a better building. It's going to be a better, more, we want to invite the world leaders here to impress them. Herod wanted to do the same thing. I'm way off subject. Herod wanted to do the same thing with the temple. It's like, you guys, come on, I will. And they tested him. They were concerned because they're afraid he's going to tear it down. Oh, we ran out of funding. So they were very, piece by piece, you know, so you can't get too far ahead and then say you can't build. And Herod, that wasn't Herod's intention. He wanted the Romans, he wanted the other countries to see, this is our religious center. And Herod then, as you know, it's called Herod's Temple. He built it. That's my point. World leaders, sometimes you just want to say, well, they're all wicked, they're all evil, they're all selfish. And Pharaoh, you could say that about Pharaoh, but it's possible that the interpretation has nothing to do with Pharaoh or how great he is or how glorious it is. It's information from the outside, from God, telling Pharaoh what he can do to save his nation or what's going to happen to his people. And so it's possible that Joseph, when Joseph interprets Pharaoh's dream, it's not about Pharaoh, it's about the people. And Pharaoh's like, yes, then what do we do? Where the other people, we don't know this, but Pharaoh somehow listens to all of his experts, and the cupbearer is standing there the whole time listening, maybe giving advice, maybe guiding it, and all of a sudden he goes, oh, I had a dream once. Oh my gosh, the baker, they both came. Here, there's a guy, well, 2 years ago, he was in, and he interpreted our dreams exactly. Do you remember when that assassination attempt, and you, the FBI investigated and found out it was him and not me, and now I'm back here? It's like, well, he says, well, go get him. And so when Joseph comes in and interprets it, Pharaoh is like listening. He doesn't dismiss Joseph. He doesn't say, let me think about it. Doesn't revisit the interpreters or the magicians and say, what do you guys think of this one? It's like sold. And Joseph, and I think we see this character here. You know, I had for my boys the cartoon Sunday school Bible. Or, you know, you ever seen a cartoon Bible? It's kind of fun to read. It's all the Bible stories as much as they can get into a cartoon Bible. And it's got Elijah, and it's got the parting of the Red Sea, and it's got all the stories. It's got Joseph. And Joseph always, you know, he looks like a young boy. He's always a young boy until he gets to be Pharaoh or gets to be in Egypt. So you get this idea that he's just this young kid, you know, maybe, you know, got beat up by his brothers or, you know, just, you know. But if you look at this line of people, including Potiphar's wife, I don't want to go there and become explicit, but she sees something there that the woman wants. And then the prison, and there's got to be bad people in there. Joseph's in charge of that. He was in charge of his brothers. He's in charge of Potiphar's house. She wanted him to be in charge of her. This is, the prison's been in charge for at least 3 years. And now Pharaoh hears him talk, and Pharaoh doesn't cut him off, say, well, we'll get back to you. Thank you for your input. Please, we'll give you a ticket to the Pharaoh fair on the way out the door. Joseph just keeps talking and lays down the agenda on this is how you should. So he's got a great mind. He's got great confidence. And Pharaoh himself, as we're going to see, it's just like hands the situation over to Joseph. So we got this idea of who Joseph is. He's a very powerful presence. He's got a very powerful way of presenting himself, very quick mind on how to resolve things. And he is, I think we can say, flawless, blameless, sinless, which is theologically incorrect. But I heard someone say this one time, and I'll say it now, and then we can just all do a quick. But besides Jesus, Joseph is the only person in the Bible that is flawless. I mean, look at Moses. Moses had his problem. Moses doesn't get to go to the promised land because he made God mad. Aaron, you can find problems with Aaron. The disciples, I mean, that's what the Gospels are all about, these flawed people. You can identify things that Paul did wrong. If you want to just start with, he killed Christians. You can find flaws. The king, Solomon, the wisest man. And then you read Ecclesiastes and you read how he ends up. It's like flawed. But now again, you could go in and read into the story. Joseph didn't get along with his brothers. Joseph, finds some intricacy. But as it's possible that Joseph is, I mean, just exactly this. He is the man in the story. And when Pharaoh hears him, that just carries over. He's like, here's my kingdom. What do we do? Now, this isn't like, well, he went to college, he got some training, he did all these things, he came, he worked his way up the ranks, proved himself faithful. No, the only thing that happened was earlier today he was in prison or in charge of the prison. They went to get him, a Pharaoh wants to meet with you, and they had to shave him. So he's been shaved. They've shaved his hair off of his body. When it says shave, it doesn't mean let's fix your hair. The Egyptians had no hair on their body. They shaved his body. And then they just probably shaved his head. And they did have shaved heads, or they did have very crop cut, just very short hair on their head. But his body's been shaved. I mean, and he's probably been dressed up to look like an Egyptian. That's where the song came from, Walk Like an Egyptian. That's the only thing. He's in prison, went to the barber, and whatever else they had to do through that, and then dressed him up as an Egyptian, and now he's talking to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh hears it. It's kind of like, I don't know, you kind of talk like a prisoner. You talk kind of gangster-like. You know, he didn't. And he goes, that's kind of a weird interpretation. It's like, no, that's a good interpretation. You talk well. You look good. I like your interpretation. I like the way you presented it. And Joseph doesn't even say, do you mind if I add something to this? According to this text, Joseph just keeps right on going. Says, takes the cup from the cupbearer and says, here, I'll take over right here. Now, here's how we'll do it. And he just starts becoming the visor. He takes the plate, the cupbearer says, well, I'll go sit down. And Joseph just like takes over for the Pharaoh. In fact, for the next 14 years, he's going to run the country, basically. I mean, there's something about Joseph's presence, and it is the presence of God in his life, that makes this story possible. And we've got this history of it right here. And so here we go. With that being said, we're at 2 years. Genesis chapter 41 in the English Standard Version. I've got that on your notes, and I've got that in the Bible here. It says Genesis chapter 41, verse 1 through 8, the first section. And after 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. And behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows, attractive, plump, and they fed on the reed grass. So 7 years, and we'll put a plus there. And I like that phrase, the reed grass. It's green grass growing up along the Nile, and these cows are just enjoying the green pastures. and they fed on the reed grass. And behold, seven other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. Now there's seven negative cows. These are ugly cows. And the ugly, thin cows, they're going to do something that's not even natural. I mean, to come up and eat the green reed grass, that's what cows do. But I don't even know if this is possible. In the, you know, there's probably an answer, and some of you may know. But if a cow is really hungry, will it eat another cow? I mean, or is it, well, you know, I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat meat. I don't know. But does anybody know? I know a hungry pig would eat. In fact, I remember going out and feeding the pigs, and my parents and my grandpa being, you be careful out there, because you're just a kid out there with the pigs, and they're like, you come out there with food, they just, well, you know, you've seen that. They would just run right over you, and if you fell down, they'd eat you too. In fact, you probably heard stories about that. So, but anyway, I'm not sure. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the seven attractive, plump cows, and Pharaoh awoke. Okay. So these are gone. And it doesn't say they became positive. They're still in a negative state, but this is devoured. And Pharaoh awoke, and he fell asleep and dreamed a second time. And behold, seven ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on one stalk. So that's good. I mean, you don't have seven stalks and each got a little. You got one stalk and seven heads of grain. And behold, after them sprouted seven ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. So you got, they're not growing well, they're not getting water, and then you got the wind ripping at them, blowing hot air on them. And that's east wind is coming off the desert, it's coming off the Sinai desert. I mean, you got the desert on the other side too. And the thin ears swallowed up the seven plump, full ears. So once again, you've got seven good, seven negative, and at the end, these are gone, and these are still negative. Now, it's going to say in the notes here, and I'll give you some information on this, but anytime in the ancient world, and probably today too, anytime you have two dreams repeated, this is interesting. Let me say it again. The same thing, but in different images. It's like, whoa, this means something. This is important right here because you've got two of them. And the thin ears swallowed up the seven plump ears, full ears, and Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So in the morning, his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. Okay, I was trying to think of that other word, magicians and wise men. And so this would be the scholars, this would be the ones who watch the stars, they know the planets, they know the holidays, the religious feasts, they know all the details of how to please the gods. And then the magicians, they know how to manipulate the world, the spiritual realm, they know how, you know, to bless the crops, they know how to call for rain. So he brought in his academic team, he brought in his spiritual team, he brought in the professors and the pastors and brought them in. And says, what do I do? University, what do I do? Church, what do I do? And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So he, in the morning, his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men, all the pastors and the university professors. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was none. Now, this is an interesting line right here, but I'm not going to give you any insight into it. There was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. Now, the Bible means what it says, but and I don't want to mock the story. If it means there was no one who could interpret, they're all just look. I mean, look right here. Here, 7 plus, 7 minus, 7 plus, 7 minus. You've got all of your university professors. You've got all of your spiritual advisors, your pastors. And it's like, I mean, it's not like you got, you know, his wife and the cupbearer. And it's like, you know, I don't know what this means. The cupbearer says, man, I'm not very good at this. His wife says, are we going shopping today? And it's like, he's got in the universities and the religious, it's all right there. And no one, so when it says no one had an interpretation, I mean, does that mean he looked around the room and everyone just got a blank stare? It's like, no clue. I mean, surely they had to have something like, well, can we, I'm not clear, but can we talk together? Maybe each group could have come up with a theory, and then they could have got together and met and then put it together and presented him with option A or option B, but no one. And so I don't know if that means no one could have any idea or no one made sense. They probably came, well, this means 7 years of, or seven something, and you got to look out, there's seven people you've got to eliminate from your staff. And it's like, it's always about me. I mean, that could be it. Joseph, as we said, is going to be about, this is about that you're the leader. You're the one who cares. You're like Julius Caesar was a good leader. You know, he's a man. You know, Herod, in a sense, was a good, I know he killed the babies, but he was an old man. He's afraid they're trying to take his kingdom from him again. I mean, you've got good leaders, but they try to please the people. They try to maintain the civilization. And so maybe they didn't have interpretations that were beneficial for the society or the culture. But no one gave an interpretation. Here's the things that got written down. The cupbearer did remember Joseph after 2 years. The cupbearer does remember Joseph. And that, you can add his name to the list. After 2 years, oh my gosh, I remember what an impact he had in my life. And again, when you compare a dream being interpreted correctly and him being delivered off of death row back to the position, you can see why those that he forgot about. Not because he's a bad person necessarily, but I'm just glad. And he's probably concerned, especially during the first year, the first few months, he's on thin ice. Hey, I met a prisoner here. I want to tell you about my friend, the prisoner, or the guy in charge. It's like, I'm just glad to be here. And he's probably on thin ice, and he's probably really being observed, you know, instead of having just a yearly evaluation, he's probably having a weekly evaluation to see if, you know, he can be trusted. So he's probably just glad to be back in. But now after 2 years, he does remember him. Point two that I got written down, dreams were considered important and would be common to employ in the house of Pharaoh dream specialists to interpret and offer advice. Dreams that came by two or as a pair were recognized as being significant. Now I've got four examples there, and you don't need to look up. You can look them up, but they're not going to give you any. But there's the Gudi, king of Lagash in 200 BC, and I think that's supposed to be 2000 BC. That's not 200, I forgot a zero. Had a double dream about building a temple. The Mari letters coming out of Egypt from 1700 to 1800 BC, that should be switched around, 1800 to 1700 BC, recorded that a king is warned twice from someone else having double dreams on consecutive nights that he should not build a temple. So two different situations. One guy was supposed to build a temple. One guy was warned not to build a temple because they had, based on double dreams. On tablet one of the Gilgamesh epic, about 2100 BC, Gilgamesh had a double dream about an upcoming encounter with Enkidu. And if you know the story at all, that's like a beast he wrestles with and becomes friends with. And in tablet four, Gilgamesh has a sequence of five dreams concerning an encounter with the guardian. And so those are all double dreams recorded so far before the time of Joseph. Now, right around the time of Joseph, in an ancient Babylonian poem called The Poem of the Righteous Sufferer, around 1700 BC, the man receives three dreams informing him that he has been cleansed. So whatever, you know, I don't know the details of it, but whatever he was suffering, he's been cleansed and it's going to be good for him now that he's gone through the suffering. But that was right around the time. So those are examples of double dreams that are recorded yet from 4,000 years ago. And so you can see why Pharaoh is concerned about having double dreams. That was common to some extent. At least we've got four other examples. And again, point four, I just kind of say everything I could think of already. It's hard to imagine none of Pharaoh's magicians or wise men could come up with some interpretation. We've already talked about that. But Joseph, now it says there's no one that could interpret it. Now, chapter 41, verse 9. Then the chief cupbearer, and again, I'm going to say it, but you don't need to hear it. This is not just the guy who walked in with his coffee in the morning and goes, oh, hey, are you having to have a bad day? No, he was probably standing right there the whole time. He's probably tried his own attempt at it. He's a trusted advisor and one of his bodyguards along with all of that. Said to Pharaoh, and again, the very fact that he says to Pharaoh, I remember my offenses today. It's like, one, he speaks to Pharaoh. I mean, that's just not something you just say without being, do you have an answer? Do you have anything? You say, you know, now that they're all gone, I've got an idea. That's pretty bold. to do with anybody, especially your boss, Presley, a leader of a country, especially Pharaoh, who is God. He is God in flesh in their minds and in Pharaoh's mind. Now you say, well, I don't think he's God. Well, he thinks he's God. And so if you've ever been around somebody, I've never talked to somebody that I thought was God, but I have encountered a few that they thought they were God. And I talk to them different than I talk to you. I'm pretty sure that we're all on the same page, but I have been around people that thought they were God, and it's like I approach them differently than I might approach you, because do you think they're God? No. But I'm talking to a guy who thinks he's God. And so the cupbearer says to Pharaoh, meaning he's got some confidence, so he's in some position. And then, I've always thought this was a, he doesn't say anything about it for 2 years, probably because he's glad it's over and he's in clear. And then I remember one time when I offended you, an offense when I was in prison. Now, when was the last time you had a boss or an employer, you got in trouble, you recovered, you got put back in position, you got trusted again, and then at some time you're going, hey, you know, remember that time I, you know, backed the truck? Okay, think of some things I've done. I drove the truck, the lumber truck down the alley and ripped off the business next to their electric meter off the wall, and they had to shut down the whole business. Remember that time I did that, and you got mad? Yeah, boy, I don't ever want. It's like once that's happened, it's repaired. You just like, you don't talk about electricity, you don't talk about meter boxes, you don't talk about the business next door. It's like you just, everything went fine. You have a little situation with the truck on the way. Well, I, you know, had a situation. No situation with the truck. You don't bring anything up again. So for this guy, after 2 years, to say, I remember when I ripped the meter off the building next door and shut that whole business down for a day. Remember that? Well, in that situation, I met someone I think that can help you. It's like, I'm going to go everywhere I can without bringing up that situation. And this is a true story, and I could tell it to you sometime. You know, you have the mirrors, you're driving down, and it's got a narrow driveway as you leave the lumber yard, and all of a sudden, I'm in college, yeah, I'm driving truck, Tony and I are married, I'm working at a lumber yard, driving truck, I liked it, you know. Not that day, oh man. And all of a sudden you hear this crunch, and you look out just in time to see the mirror hanging and the glass falling, and think, I wonder if that's going to cause a problem. And so I parked the truck. I walked into the boss there in the front of the, he sat, it's a small lumber yard. It's not like Lowe's. It's a small town. It's Maryville, Missouri, lumber yard. He's sitting at the desk. And I say, I walk up and he looks. And I say, I just ripped the meter off the building next door. And he goes, and right then the phone rings. I know. He says, I know. And I'm looking like, are you going to cut my hands off? What are you going to do? I'm like waiting for my punishment. He goes, just go. Just go. And they had to call to get it fixed. But it's like one of those things where you're just like, but okay, sorry. The butler is out of prison. I didn't go to prison. I had to come back and just, I checked, make sure the lights were on. But anyway, he brings it up. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember my offense today. Meaning I've been blocking it out for 2 years, trying to work myself back into a place that I thought you could trust me. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me and the chief baker in custody. Now we get a little more insight on why they were. He was angry with them. Did they spill a drink? Did they try to poison him? We don't know. We dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with its own interpretation. Meaning he had it, that both had to be interpreted. You couldn't just say they both mean the same thing. A young Hebrew was there with us. Now notice, he's a Hebrew. They recognize him as a Hebrew. They know where he's from. A servant of the captain of the guard. Now that, I called him here, the prison keeper. So you've got Potiphar, who's in charge of the house, and under Potiphar was the guard of the prison, and Joseph just got transferred. When he told him, He interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his own dream. And as he interpreted to us, so it came about. I was restored to my office. So now you know the cupbearer is in, he calls it an office, a position. And the baker was hanged. Now, you know, you read that, coming out of the Wild West, you think they put a rope up over a tree somewhere and hung him. But as we know, that was probably impaled. There's a stake, and we talked about it before, and his body was hung on a stake, and the birds are going to come eat him and stuff like that as he is hung on a stake. So when hung, he was hung up on a stake. Okay, and you know that. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph. That's all he needs. The cupbearer says it. He trusts the cupbearer. And apparently Pharaoh says, well, we'll take care of that later. It doesn't give you any impression that there's a time. He wants to know. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. So now that's interesting, right? Quickly, okay, that Pharaoh wants him now. So Pharaoh's not waiting, brought him out of the pit. Now, if you look over here, and again, you can make a big deal about it, just say it's just a synonym. Pharaoh was angry and interpreted, young Hebrew, a servant of the captain of the guard. So Joseph was the servant of the captain of the guard 2 years ago. When they call for him, Joseph, yeah, we got a guy here to go through the paper. Well, isn't he the servant of the captain of the guard? Doesn't he work for the head of the prison system? Well, no, he used to be in Potiphar's house, who's in charge of all the military, all the prisons, but he got demoted to the prison, and he worked for the head of the prison itself, getting demoted, but that was 2 years ago. You should have saw what happened. Now, we don't know what happened, and maybe nothing happened, but you could play along with me. You should have saw what happened. There was these guys accused him of this, or this woman came in and said this about him, and it's like, you know, a guy from a Hebrew from the foreign land got in trouble with Potiphar. I guess he had a record with Potiphar's wife, something. That was in the papers for a while, and now he's here, and he got accused of this. Oh, no. He's not here in the prison. He's where? In the pit. Now, you understand, it says pit. That is not the word for prison, and it's definitely not the place you keep the assistant for the captain of the guard who's in charge of the prison. So he's gone from being the head of the man's house who's in charge of the whole prison system to being demoted to the prison where he's risen out of his prison cell to where he's working for the captain of the guard there of the prison, and even goes and visits people in prison to give them what they need, like the baker and the cupbearer. But 2 years later, oh, yeah, we've moved him. He's now in the pit. Now, that's all I've got. That's all I'm working with. Okay, you can say, well, that means prison. It's the same thing. It's not worded the same way. It sounds like, now if you watch, and now, but I can do this too. He was born in Jacob's house. Jacob promoted him to the top. He got thrown into a cistern, brought out of the cistern, sold to Egypt, rose to the top, and then was taken and put in the prison. Rose to the top, and now is back in a pit. So you got Joseph's life has gone. Well, I don't have room, but I don't want to erase this very important information right here. 7 plus minus 7. Okay, but Joseph's life has gone here, crash. Here, crash. Now he's the head of the prison, and if this is going to continue, what's the next thing to happen right here? The next thing will be a pit. So this in the prison, this in Potiphar's house, this in his own house with Jacob, and now he's here and he's coming up now for the last time possibly. Again, this is extra biblical insight information from Galen's in, you know, presenting. But this would look like the pattern, and now he is ready. He's passed the test. 1, 2, 3 times in this position. That doesn't give us the information, but in this place right here, and you can kind of tell when he comes out who he's talking about. When he comes out of here, he is not whatever he is. You can admit he got sold into Egypt. You could admit he got lied about with Potiphar's wife. You can admit he shouldn't be in prison, but he's got a kind of a cushy job in prison. If you're going to be in prison, you might as well be in charge of the prisoners. Okay? Well, now he's in the pit. Does that mean he's in the same place, or does that mean he's crashed again? And when he comes out, now he's, was he bitter here when he came out? No. Was he bitter here when he came out? No. What about now? Well, here it is. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. There it is, English Standard Version. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. And it says shaved himself. That can mean shaved his head, but it can also mean an Egyptian understanding. You've got to shave. He comes out of there looking like an Egyptian. He doesn't look like it. He looks like a Hebrew. They identified him as a Hebrew. He's in prison. He looks like a Hebrew. He's not shaved. He's in a pit. He comes out. He shaves himself, or they have him shaved. He gets dressed, and he appears before Pharaoh, and he's not bitter about his brothers. He's not bitter about Pharaoh's wife or Potiphar's wife. He's not bitter about, where is that cupbearer? I told you to remember me. You should have saw what happened in the last 2 years. He's not looking to get revenge. It's like, okay, here I am. What do I do? For me, that's a great testimony. It's like, well, just do your time, show back up, and what were you supposed to do? Well, I'm going to now interpret these two dreams. But I want to make sure I get back at my brothers. Potiphar's wife needs to be dealt with. And also, this guy forgot me for 24 months, forgot all about me. And I've been down, and while he forgot about me, all these things happened. It's like, no, here we go. He's dealt with it. Now he's here. I mean, for me, that's an example. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, now here we go, I've had a dream, and there's no one who can interpret it. Again, that's a strange statement. You've got a team of dream interpreters. It's like I'm on a desert island, and I've had a dream. There's no one here to interpret the dream. Oh, if there's only a dream interpreter here. Well, no, I just sent all the dream interpreters back because they didn't know what to do with it, or they gave me lousy interpret. I mean, I'm smart enough to know when someone's making stuff up. I'm not sure, but there's no one here that can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Now, here we go. This is important now. I heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can. I've heard about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. You've got a reputation, son. Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. I mean, he just burns the resume. It's not me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Now, you don't have to, but this falls in line. Again, we go back to this. He was in a pit with his brothers. He was put in prison because of Potiphar's wife, and they brought him out of a pit right here. Now, what that means, it just says pit. I don't know. This wasn't a good pit. This wasn't a good pit. There's another pit. If it's the same, I don't know. But when he comes out of here and they read his resume or read it, they've shaved him, they've clothed him, he looks like an Egyptian, so you're playing the part. And I've got a resume right here for you. It says that when you hear, you can, and you can interpret. It's like, well, it's like you're ready to go. Shaved, dressed, resume, what do you think? That's not the way it works. That's not the way it works. You don't get out of these things with resumes and dressing up and shaving and being impressive. It is God. Now, what's important about God, if you want to, look over to top of page 3. I've got the interlinear there for you. And you know this, but I'm going to say it again. And you can keep checking as we go through here. There is the name Yahweh, translated capital L, capital O, R, D, all letters, Lord. And there is the name Elohim. Or in the Hebrew, it's got a ha in front of it, so it's the Elohim. And that's translated God, if you're talking about our God, or if you're talking about the Egyptian Elohim, or El, that's G-O-D, same word. just depends if we're talking about our creator God or if you're talking about Ra, the Egyptian god. This is capitalized. When Joseph talks to Pharaoh, or when Joseph talks to any Egyptian outside of the Hebrews, he calls him Elohim. Yahweh is used, that's the in-house name. This is the covenant God. This is the God who spoke to Abraham. It's the same guy, but Yahweh is the covenant God. He's the personal God. They know him by his personal name. Now, Paul does something similar to this in Romans chapter 1, 2. And again, we could go through that. And this is important. This is important for our culture. We know him as Jesus Christ. We know him as God manifest in flesh, died on the cross for our sins. Jesus is the Creator. Jesus is Lord. Jesus is God. This is Jesus. But when you go to college, you go out into the workplace, you mix it up with a pagan nation, and you start talking about Yahweh, or you start talking about Jesus, it's like, that's so far Jesus. I mean, you mean the baby in the manger, you mean the story about Easter, you mean that Christian, you know, I mean, they've got their own whatever. It's like, no. Plus it's a personal relationship. We can't talk about Jesus. But we do. But in Romans chapter 1 and 2, Paul breaks it down, all men know, because God has made it plain to them. And he talks about Elohim. All men know there's a creator. All men know they're held accountable to this creator God. He talks about God. Now, the whole book's about Jesus and the Christian faith, but he talks about Jesus to the believers, but he explains to them that they know who the world knows who God is. Now, I do not expect the world, I don't expect our United States politicians, I don't expect our university professors, I don't expect the doctors in the medical field, I don't expect the people that are working the hourly jobs to know Yahweh or Jesus. That's a special relation. You need to have some revelation. You need to have the Spirit of God reveal to you what this means. Let's not worry about Yahweh or Jesus. Do you believe in God? And if you say, I don't believe in Jesus, okay, that's level 2 or level 30 or level 3,000. Do you believe in God? No, I don't. Well, all creation is pointing to this fact. You have to come to grips that there is a God, there is a creator that you're responsible for, and that there's a God holding you accountable that's going to judge you someday. This is a serious issue. Well, I don't believe in God. Well, that's stupid. Not to believe in Jesus is in a sense acceptable because you don't understand it. It hasn't been revealed to you. If you really understand Jesus, it's the Spirit of God has revealed it. Jesus says that. Peter, flesh and blood didn't show this to you. My Father in heaven has shown. Who do men say that? Oh, they think you're Elijah, come back. Some say you're John the Baptist. Who do you say that I am? You're the Son of God. And he says, listen, he says, flesh and blood did not reveal that to you. You didn't get that from being on this earth. My Father has revealed that to you. So when you go up in this category up here, that's revelation from God by his Spirit. Now, anybody can say the name Christmas. Everybody celebrates baby Jesus. Everybody knows the word Jesus. In fact, you've heard it in some inappropriate context. Everybody knows this, but knows the word. But not everybody can handle this revelation. And this is easy to mock because you don't know it. If you do understand who Jesus is, the Spirit of God has revealed that to you. Flesh and blood did. But who reveals Elohim? Who reveals God? Paul in Romans chapter 1 and 2 says, Everybody knows it. It's revealed. So there is no one without excuse. There's going to be excuses why you don't know this. But the number one excuse is going to be God didn't reveal it to you because you weren't seeking. This right here, you have to go out of your way to say, everybody's got, they're trying to find God. They're trying to find God. Everybody knows there has to be a God. Now, in our modern culture, there is science. There is math. There's academia. There's things that we don't know. I just bought Tyler a secular book about the Scopes monkey trial. It's written by someone that is not a believer in Christianity. It's a school book for his age that I found somewhere, but it explains, because we were talking about it. And I said you need to understand the Scopes monkey trial. But I says you got to understand this is going back, you know, in the early 1900s. It's the 1930s. It's in my Hope for America's Last Generation book. But I want him to read it because in there, they mock Christianity. They mock God. But it's clear that they're trying to create, God creates everything, our creation evolved. And it's really, and he'll see it, and he's already picking up on it. It's ridiculous not to believe in God, a creator. You cannot explain reality without there being a super creator God somewhere. This is that. Now, whole point for saying all that, what you see right there in that text, verse 16, looking at the Hebrew, you can read it backwards with me. So answered Joseph, Pharaoh, saying, not in me, and then the word God. And that is the word Elohim. Elohim will give an answer. And then the next word, of peace, Pharaoh, to, and et means to, of peace to Pharaoh. That means that's the thing that's going to be given, the direct object. Of peace to Pharaoh. That's interesting right there. He's going to give a message of God. God is going to give you a message of peace. Meaning he's going to tell you what this means. It is, it's the word shalom. You see, that's the word shalom. You can see it in the Hebrew. God has given you a message of shalom. It's like he's given you the answer. He's given you peace. So he's saying, I can't do it, but Elohim can. The whole point of saying that, you watch and check your scriptures, and you can check me on this. And I think this is accurate throughout the Bible. When they're talking to heathen or people from another country, another culture outside of Israel's covenant with Yahweh, they're referring to Elohim. When they say Yahweh, they're talking on a whole nother. This is the creator. This is the creator who's made a personal covenant with Abraham that I'm going to do these things in history through your nation. Now, Elohim, you may know him as Elohim, but you don't have the right to Yahweh because you're not Israeli. You're not a descendant of Abraham. But when Yahweh became a man, died on the cross for the sins of the world, Yahweh is Jesus in the sense of the revealing the covenant. This is the gospel message. All nations will be blessed. Yahweh will bless all nations through Abraham. He's going to be born as a man, a descendant of Abraham as a man, and he will pay out for the sins of the world on a cross and make that covenant, not just a covenant of a nation, a physical nation, but a covenant of salvation for all of mankind. So now mankind can come back to their creator with the sacrifice of Jesus, who is Yahweh, the covenant God, who is the creator himself, who revealed himself in a covenant, became a man, paid for the sins, so everyone can come back and not be judged and condemned by God. And so right now he's calling him Elohim, but he's in his own mind, it's Yahweh. Now, that I think that's why in the pit, you have this kind of understanding, and you're in a pit, it's like, I don't have the right. I don't have the right to despair. There's something, and even if this is God's plan for my life, to spend my life in the pits I am going to be faithful to my covenant God. And here's Joseph. All right. Came out of the pit. Oh, my goodness. Okay, I'm going back to page 3. And then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he shaved himself and changed his clothes and started looking like an Egyptian, I added that part, he came before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said that when you hear a dream, you can't interpret it. Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. Elohim will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Elohim. You know him as Elohim. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, in my dream I was standing on the banks of the Nile. 7 cows, plump and attractive, came up out of the Nile and fed in the green grass. It's interesting that we have the dreams again. Of all the things in Genesis that we're trying to shove all that into one book, we go ahead and tell this dream twice. You could just say, as I said to these guys, what do you think? But no, Moses is going to record the whole dream again, which is just, I don't know, it's like, interesting that why not, you know, sum it up. Well, nonetheless, 7 other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and thin, such as I have never seen in all the land of Egypt. And right there, all the land of Egypt, he's talking about his nation. I've never seen this in my nation before. What is this? Which maybe points back to the interpretation. Well, Pharaoh, you're going to have 7 years of this and 7 years of this. You're going to, it's like, no, I'm the Pharaoh of a nation. I care about these people. And the thin, ugly cows ate up the first 7 plump cows. But when they had eaten them, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were still as ugly as the beginning. Then I awoke. I also saw in my dream 7 ears growing on the one stalk, full and good. 7 ears withered, thin, and blighted by the east wind sprouted after them, and the thin ears swallowed up the 7 good ears. And I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. Now again, now he said not interpret, he says explain it. They interpret it. Explain to me why that makes sense. I'm just trying to give you an answer. Meaning we're talking interpret and explain now. He said no one can interpret. Now he says no one can explain. So maybe they were interpreting with some humble jumble, but it didn't make sense. It's like, come on, guys. And we as Christians, or more likely, we as 21st century Americans with knowledge and insight, we know Pharaoh was backwards and stupid. He wasn't like us, where we are cutting and clever and smart. And it's like, no. I would guess that Pharaoh had his act together, that he knew how to run a country. He knew how to run a military. He knew how to protect the borders. He knew how to, you know, do the infrastructure. And when someone comes up and gives him a lame interpretation, it's like, no, that's not it. Well, Joseph steps up. Well, here it is. There's no one that can interpret it. Okay, what else we got on the next page? Then when Pharaoh says, but there's no one that can explain it to me, means that they did not give acceptable, reasonable, logical answers. Okay, page 4, last page, my friends. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. Here's the interpretation. I'm going to read this and quit. The dreams of Pharaoh are one. Same thing. Now notice how quickly he moves into it. And now watch how confident he is. He doesn't give him all, I appreciate being here. The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God, not Yahweh, God, the creator of the universe, who is the judge of the universe, has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Not what's going to happen to you, but what he is going to do. God is in control of history, and he's telling you what he's going to. He's not looking down the corridors of time and saying, oh no, this is what's going to happen, and I'm God, so I know what's going to happen. No, Joseph says, he, Elohim, the creator of the universe, he is going to do this. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one. It's the same thing. The 7 lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the 7th empty ears blighted by the east wind are also 7 years of famine. It is as I told Pharaoh. God, Elohim, has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. You are going to make Egypt great again for 7 years. But after them there will arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. Again, in the land. This has nothing to do with you, Pharaoh. This has everything to do with God, what he's doing, and what's going to happen to your land. The famine will consume the land, and the plenty will be unknown in the land by reason of the famine that will follow. For it will be very severe. And the doubt and the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God. You're not going to be able to offer a sacrifice. You're not going to be able to fix something. This is coming down. And again, fixed by Elohim, and Elohim will shortly bring it about. It's about to happen. We're on the fast track. In fact, I think the 7 years are beginning this season. This is not in the distant future, 1, 2, 3. We're starting right now. This season is number one. Now, therefore, because it's happening now, it's happening fast, and it's 7 followed by 7. Therefore, I've done some research, or give me some time to look some things up on the internet. Therefore, Pharaoh, select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. You need to find someone that has intelligence enough to understand this and figure out how to solve this problem. Let Pharaoh proceed to a point. Now again, God is not doing this to destroy you. If he's doing this to destroy you, that would have been part of the vision. You're getting this vision or these dreams so you can be spared. Here's what God is going to do. For some reason, unknown in this story, God is going to do this. Now, God has told you so you can fix it. And you fix it by finding a wise and discerning man, appoint overseers over the land, and take 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt during the 7 plentiful years. So 1/5, you just take it. Now, you're not taxing the people. You're taking from the people to feed them when they don't have anything for 7 years. So this is not taxation. You can call it that. You can promote it however you want to. It depends on if you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent on how you're going to phrase it. But what you're going to do, we're going to take this and we're going to feed it to you in the 7 years where there's nothing. And let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming, and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food. Now Pharaoh is not getting, this is not a get rich quick scheme by Pharaoh. You are forcing this on the people because you are responsible to save the people when there's nothing for 7 years. Notice the whole difference of authority. It's not like, oh, I'm going to get rich. I'm a dropout college student. I'm going to run for office, and now I'm a multi-billionaire and I own an island and a boat in the Caribbeans. It's like, why? Well, I work for the government. It's like, what? No. If you work for the government, we should be getting boats. How do we get, whatever? So all this is going, not that I'm not saying I need a boat. I don't want a boat. But the government is working for the people. And let them gather the food for these good years that are coming, and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through the famine. And so Joseph goes from explaining the dream to saying, well, there's only what you need, to this is coming and it's going to start now. You need to find someone that can start managing this problem right now and start storing up the grain and the food, because in 7 years from now, you're not going to have anything. Whatever you have from that first 7 is going to sustain you for the next 7. You don't have much time. And that confidence, apparently, Pharaoh sees that confidence. In fact, do I even have it on here? I don't. That's the end of my account. But as you know, we'll pick this up next week. But what ends up happening is Pharaoh says, looks around his court. It's like, is there anyone like Joseph? I mean, have you guys ever heard anyone talk like this? Now, he doesn't think maybe he knows, maybe he doesn't. But he doesn't think he's a Hebrew. He doesn't act like a Hebrew. He's dressed like an Egyptian. He's shaved like an Egyptian. He's caring about the country like an Egyptian. It's like, he says, let's just hand this over to Joseph. He's going to hand it over. Says, you're the man. He said, I'm surrounded by professors and pastors, and no one can explain it like you do. You're in charge. What do we do? And there may still be evidence of what Joseph did. There's several things that still remain. You got to be careful because, people like me want to find the Bible everywhere. But there are some things that are, and I've seen things that are ridiculous, but there are some things that are pretty clear that, well, we've got, like we said before, where is it at on here? Oh, the statue here that they found, the Avaris in the land of Goshen, the canal that was dug during this time that brought water out of the Nile all the way into the fertile land, and they watered the fields. And then they had storerooms built right by the canal that were three stories up above and two below, where they were just stuffed with grain that are now, you know, emptied. But it's like there's several, and even that canal that was cut, it still maintains the name in Egyptian, however they speak it, the canal of Joseph. It's still called that. Now, again, I got to do some more research on this. I've seen this in videos and stuff, people talking about it. But this is not a fictional story. In fact, if you look at the last things you've got there on page 5, there are 5 things. What do we got here? Well, I'm not sure. But there is 5 different places. Well, the famine inscription of the Shehel Island. The Shehel Island, if you look on the map, you see where it says, it's in a square box. I've got a square around it. So you can see the Red Sea, you can see the Nile River, and there's a place called Shehel Island. That's not what we're talking about. But there is on that island the famine stela, and there's a picture of it there. Of a rock with this Egyptian carving and writing on it, but that's from 2600 BC, 2686 to 2649, talking about during Pharaoh Dozier's reign. Oh no, an inscription from 250 BC. It was written in 250 BC, but it's describing an event around 2600 BC due to Nile's failure to flood, and it records what took place. Is all recorded there. So that's not this account. But it's interesting that there was a 7-year famine during that time that was remembered in 250 BC when this was written, and it's not the same account. But a 7-year famine is not unusual. It's documented right here from a different time period. So it all fits in with all that. So we'll get some more evidence possibly for this and more of the story as we go. I'll pray and you're free to go. I do appreciate you being here. Father, we thank you for the chance to look into this word. We thank you that we know you as our creator, Elohim, but we also know you as our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, who's revealed himself to us. And we ask that the Spirit of God would continue to lead and guide us, that we would not merely just be saved and escaping this earth, which we are glad and we glorify you for that opportunity, that we will be delivered from death and sin. But we ask that during this time right now, during these days, that we would live a life, that we would rise out of the pit, that we would live a life that is pleasing to you, that we would live in righteousness and holiness in a world of sin and confusion, that we would ourselves produce your character, but also to serve others with the goodness that you've given to us. We do thank you for this opportunity, and thank you for the chance to read and understand the scriptures in our country. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.